believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was drafted 18th overall in the first round of the 1985 NBA draft by the Detroit Pistons and played for them for 14 years. He was known as the most invisible player and the quiet assassin. Michael Jordan called him the best defender he ever played against. Today he's the Pistons' president of basketball operations and is a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame. His name, Joe Dumars. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with the Pistons president of basketball operations, Joe Dumars. Joe, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. I am. I was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. I was raised in Natchitoches, Louisiana. I'm the youngest of seven kids. My father is Joe Dumars. My mother is Ophelia Dumars. My grandfather was Joe Dumars, so I am Joe Dumars III from Natchitoches, Louisiana, and youngest of seven kids.
What did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from your dad?
Tremendous sense of accountability, responsibility, truth and honesty. These were salt of the earth people. These were working people. My dad drove an 18-wheeler and delivered food and produce to all the stores in Louisiana. My mother was a baker at a bakery. And they were just working people who instilled a tremendous amount of family values in all of us, in all seven of us.
We jump ahead to the 1989 NBA Finals. The Pistons win, and you're named the most valuable player.
Mm-hmm.
The sports writers try to find you, nowhere to be found, and they eventually find you talking to your mom on the telephone,
mm-hmm.
I think drinking milk, and also you gave that first championship ring to your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You have tremendous love for your mom and dad. Why?
You know what? We grew up without a lot of the material things that a lot of kids had. We grew up on the lower end of the economic spectrum. But what we did have was a tremendous amount of love and caring in the house. Very, very close-knit family. We were born Southern Baptist, church every Sunday. And so our family was just, it was a group that we stayed close to. One thing I will say, probably more than anything else, that my father taught was humility. He really stressed about being humble and carrying yourself and walking with humility. And so, even though we won a championship in 1989, my first priority is to talk to them, is to let them know that that humility that they taught us all to have was in play right now, because here's a time where you can really get away from yourself with everything that was coming that night. And I just wanted to assure them that, hey, listen, I understand. You guys have prepared me for this, and I'll handle this the right way.
That night when you called your mom and dad, what's the first thing your mom said and what's the first thing your dad said?
Both of them said, we're so proud of you. We are absolutely so proud of you, so happy for you. And I remember my dad saying that night, son, you're going to look back on this night for the rest of your life, and you'll never forget this night here, and how true that was. He understood the moment. My mother understood the moment. But they just said, you know, they were proud of me, and they just wanted to make sure that, you know what, everything that's coming at you, Remember everything we taught you. Handle yourself the right way.
Let's jump back. You're a young son. You're the youngest of six boys.
Mm-hmm.
Natchitoches is football town. Joe Delaney, Mark Duper, Terry Bradshaw,
mm-hmm.
one of your older brothers, David, played
mm-hmm.
in the USFL.
Mm-hmm.
How was it you got into basketball, not football, Joe?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right about football. Louisiana, Texas, Florida, you go down there and, you know, it's church, family, and football, I can assure you. And we was a football city, football town. I was from a football family. But I was the youngest of seven, as I said. I was the youngest boy. And often when you're the youngest, you're always looking to carve out your own niche. I simply chose basketball because it wasn't football, because it was different, and because I was just so it was so important to me, Jack, to carve out my own niche. My brothers were all very good football players. And like I said, being the youngest, I just did not want to have to follow in their footsteps. And so it could have been baseball. It could have been any other sport. But I was going to do something different to try to distinguish myself from everyone else.
How talk about the first basketball court that your dad built for you?
Dirt backyard with a lot of sand and dirt. In Louisiana, you got a lot of red dirt down in that area. So a lot of sand and dirt. An old door that my dad sawed in half, found a rim, and just nailed the rim to the half a door that he cut, and that was enough for me. You know, that was when I first started shooting basketball, and shooting on that dirt court with a half door. With just a rim up there, and that's how it all started for me in deep South Louisiana.
Who did you pretend you were when you were out there?
You know what? Older guys in the city, guys who were the athletes, who were the star athletes in my city, or in my little town that I grew up in, because we weren't exposed. It wasn't like it is now, 24-hour sports center and that kind of stuff. So I really wasn't exposed until I got a little older and I started watching the New York Knicks and Walt Frazier and those type of Jerry West and those type of guys. I started watching those guys on TV a little bit, but mainly when I first started, it was older guys in my community or one of my older brothers or something like that that I just wanted to grow up and be like those guys.
We're talking to Joe Dumars. When we come back, we'll ask him where he got his love for reading. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Newt's Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Joe Dumars, the Pistons president of basketball operations. Joe, you're famous for loving to read.
Mm-hmm.
How did that ever happen?
You know what? I don't know if it goes on in schools anymore, but when I was younger, third, fourth grade, there was always a period in class where the teacher would stop and read. And we would read, she'd read a book. And she wouldn't read, obviously, the whole book during that 30, 40-minute time, but she'd read for like 30, 40 minutes a day. And, you know, she might get a chapter in or two chapters in, and you're always left kind of hanging until the next day until she read. And so we'd sit there and listen to the teacher read. And you know, it was always so interesting to me because whenever she stopped reading, you always wanted her to keep going because you wanted to know what was going to happen. And that just piqued my interest in reading. And from that, I started kind of sneaking off to the public library away from everybody else and reading for a couple of hours a day. And the reason I snuck off is because it was kind of nerdy for athletes in my town to be in the library reading. So I wouldn't let anybody know I was reading. So I'd just kind of sneak off, go to the public library, and read two, three, four times a week, and absolutely just fell in love with it.
You attended Natchitoches Central High School. You
mm-hmm.
became a basketball star. A lot of large schools wanted to give you a basketball scholarship, and you choose McNeese State University.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
You know what? The other schools, to be honest with you, I felt just like another number to them. McNeese State showed a genuine interest in me. They showed a genuine interest in my development. And I knew if I went there, I wasn't going to be just another number. And that's what appealed to me. I wanted to go somewhere where I could grow. I wanted to go somewhere where I knew I wasn't just another number. And McNeese State was about 2.5 hours away from home. And so, you know, I said, you know what, it's not so much about the name of the school or how big it is. For me, I want to go somewhere where for the next 4 years I'm going to be comfortable, I'm going to enjoy my surroundings, I'm going to grow as a person, and that's why I chose McNeese State.
As we listen to your story from starting with nothing, Joe, and you've won championships, you've been to the White House, you're the president of the Pistons, you're the NBA's Executive of the Year in 2003, you're in the Basketball Hall of Fame, where and how did you ever get the courage to dream so big?
Very easy answer. As you know, now, I was born in 63, Jack, and so those years, those formative years for me were the mid-70s, 73, 75, 76, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. Jack, that's when I was doing all that reading in the libraries. Like I said, there was no CNN 24-hour news where you saw everything that was going on in the world. The only way you could find out then was by reading. And so I started reading and started reading about all these places all over the world, all these things. I started reading about the White House and reading all these facts about what how the White House was built and how many rooms and all these different things. And that's when I started dreaming, only because I read so much and I read about places in Europe and in the Middle East and other states and just different cultures. And that opened my eyes that there's a whole big world out there that's far different than Natchitoches. And I wanted to experience that. It piqued my interest, and I wanted to see the world. And I don't know if I would have done that, Jack, if it wasn't for reading, if it wasn't for going to that library and just sitting there reading about all these places around the world.
What would you say to a mom or dad tonight listening who has a teenage son or daughter that never wants to read? How can they get that kid to read?
Well, I will say this. There has to be something that that child is interested in. So whatever it is that child is interested in, get a book on that particular subject. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so, you can't just stuff a book down their throat that they have no interest in that subject matter. So whatever the subject matter is, if they're into videos, if they're into drawing, art, or whatever it is, you have to get something to pique their interest. And so that would be my advice, is find out what their interest is, or if you know what your child's interest is, get a book on that particular subject and give it to him. And I guarantee you, if the kid is really into that particular subject, he's going to pick up that book and read it.
We jump ahead. In 1985, you're drafted by the Pistons.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find out?
Actually, you know, I was in New York. They would invite the top 12 to 15 players in the draft, or if they thought you were going to be one of the top 12 to 15 players in the draft. So I was one of the players in draft that was invited to the draft. So I was actually at the draft in New York when I got drafted. And lo and behold, Detroit Pistons called my name out, and I had never spoken with the Pistons or visited Detroit or anything about Detroit when they called my name out.
Life is a look at Dave Bing. He thought he was going to be drafted by the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes here, and you're the same story.
Exactly. You know, it's interesting how things work out. Like I said, I had absolutely no idea that I would end up in Detroit. And like I said, when they called my name out at the draft, I was the most shocked person in the room. I just was blown away, and I'm walking up to shake the commissioner's hand on the stage, and I'm thinking as I walk up there, Detroit, I know absolutely nothing about their team or anything like that. I knew about Detroit, but not about their team. And so, like I said, it was a blessing in disguise.
Talk about your first season with the Pistons, Joe.
Cultural shock. Climate shock, environment shock. It was just a huge adjustment for me. Growing up in Louisiana, a completely different culture, completely different climate. and going from college to professional is a completely different environment. And so it was a year of adjustments. I enjoyed it, though. I enjoyed the new challenge of it. I looked at it as my first step in starting to see the world. You know, I'd read about so many things in life. And when I left Louisiana, I realized then, this is my first step in this journey to actually see the world that I've read about over the years, because I knew this would allow me to expand and grow as a person.
What was the single biggest thrill that first year?
Single biggest thrill, the first night of the regular season opener. We were still playing at the Pontiac Silverdome, and to run out on the floor the first night, and that place, you know, they would have 25, 30,000 people in there, and to run out on that floor the first night and realize I'm now a professional athlete. I've been watching these guys on television, and I've dreamed about this, and I wished that this could happen and never thought it could, coming from a small town. And just to run out there the first night and look around in that building and realize I'm here. This is amazing here.
Michael Jordan has called you the best defender he ever played against.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about playing against Michael Jordan.
Well, I think, first of all, he was absolutely an incredible player. But I think whenever you're playing against someone who as fantastic as he was, you either have to embrace playing against that guy or you are going to shy away from playing against that guy. And I always embraced playing against him. It was the game that I look forward to more than any other game during the season. I think a lot of people shied away from it because he was so great and, you know, he could go out and have great games and make you look bad. I never looked at it like that. I looked at it as that's the one game that I'm looking forward to playing. I want to play against him. I want to go to battle with him. And we had some fierce battles, and I think that he recognized that and realized that that I embraced it. And I think that's why he ended up having a lot of respect for what I did.
We're talking to Joe Dumars. When we come back, we'll ask him for a couple of great Michael Jordan stories. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Joe Dumars, who was known as the most invisible player and the quiet assassin. Joe, couple of Michael Jordan stories, if you would.
Michael Jordan stories. I've told people before, Jack, that there were nights that I played him where he would come down, Jack, and make the most incredible, unbelievable play, move, whatever, on the court and score and do something that was just incredible. And I told my friends there were so many nights that I would turn and run back down the court, no expression on my face. But inside, Jack, I was a little kid as a fan thinking, oh, my God, did you see what that guy just did? And people always laugh and say, you actually thinking that? And I was like, there were times I wanted to, like, run by him and give him five and say, that was incredible, man. But, I mean, he was that incredible to me. And I think one other thing is there were a couple of summers that he and I would run into each other, and it was interesting because, Jack, he always wanted, this is before they became champions, he always asked me and talked to me about what it took to be a champion and how hard do you guys work in the summer. And I knew he was picking my brains and eventually he would become a champion, but it always struck me that as great as he was, what piqued his interest the most, Jack, was him wanting to be a world champion, and he knew that we were that, and that's what he was trying to get. And so those things stand out to me, the things he did on the court that were incredible, and his hunger to become a champion off the court.
Now, you talked about your dad's name is Joe, your
mm-hmm.
grandfather's name is Joe.
Mm-hmm.
You and Debbie have a son and
mm-hmm.
a daughter,
mm-hmm.
and your son is named?
Jordan. but absolutely nothing to do with Michael Jordan. This was a name that my wife and I just liked, and we decided that whether it was a girl or a boy, we were going to name our child Jordan. And for years, people thought, you know, well, was it in honor of Michael Jordan? And I always tell people, as much as I like Michael Jordan, I can assure you I'm not going to name my son after, I mean, he's a great player, but not that great, where I'm going to name my child after him. But so it really had nothing to do with him. It was just a name that my wife and I really liked. And like I said, we were going to name either our daughter or our son Jordan.
Talk about the night in 1989 mm-hmm. when you won your first NBA championship.
Yeah, magical night, Jack. A magical night. And when I say magical, I mean this. Almost kind of an out-of-body experience. Celebrating in the Los Angeles Forum. On the other end of the court is Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy and Pat Riley and all these great, great names in basketball. And being named the MVP that night and being from Natchitoches, Louisiana, and looking around, watching everybody from Detroit celebrate, it was absolutely a spectacular night. And I've said to people before, it is the best night of my sporting life. Not my children, not my marriage, not any of that, but just in terms of sports. There's never been another night like the night that we won the first championship in Los Angeles.
Joe, you're very soft-spoken. In a world of trash talk, you're a quiet leader, and you've achieved so much, you've been so successful. How?
Well, you know, that's always an interesting question for me, and it's always a very good question that I really enjoy answering, Jack. And that is, and the reason why is this. It's because I think in the world today, there's so much loud and brash talk that goes on to people actually equate success with whoever's the loudest and whoever's the brashest. And I never equated that with that. And so when people ask that, my question becomes, when did soft-spoken and carrying yourself the right way become unsuccessful? And so I don't equate the loudest guy in the room being the toughest guy or the guy with the most resolve. To me personally, Jack, and this is just me, those guys always had something either to hide, or they were always masking something by having to be so loud. I have a quiet resolve in me that will never, ever quit. But I don't have to beat my chest. I don't have to be the loudest guy. I don't have to be brash and braggadocious and those type of things. But there's a resolve inside of me that just requires me to try to be the best that I can be every day, and I just never thought I needed to be loud and like I said, brash to do so.
If there's a young listener tonight, Joe Dumars, who's extremely shy, painfully shy, what advice would you give to that young boy or girl?
The shy part is not the most relevant part. What's relevant is what's inside of you. Don't equate shy with being a person that's not confident. So often when you see someone that's quiet or someone that's shy, people equate that with not having confidence. There are a lot of quiet people that have a tremendous amount of confidence inside of themselves, and that's just the way they go about doing it. So I would say to that young person out there listening tonight, if you're a quiet person, absolutely great. That's wonderful. Be who you are. But make sure you have that resolve inside of you that is going to determine whether you make it or not. It's not going to be whether you talk or not. It's going to be whether you have the resolve to become great or to be successful at whatever it is you want to do.
You play with the Pistons for 14 years, from 85 to 99. And then in 2000, Mr. Davidson, Tom Wilson, names you as the Pistons president of basketball operations. How did that ever come about?
Actually, it was Bill Davidson talking to me during my last year playing. I was playing in 99, and I had a meeting with him after practice one day, and he broached the subject with me to take over basketball, the organization, from a leadership standpoint. And so it was broached while I was still playing, Jack, actually. And what I said to him was, I can't do that the day after I retire. I'm going to need 6-7 months, get away, study, learn the collective bargaining agreement, learn the ins and outs of the business side of what I need to do, and then I can, you know, I'll feel much better about doing it. And so that's why there was a 6-9 month gap between the time I retired and actually stepped into the office, because I just felt that I needed to create some distance between me and my teammates for a while, who I just finished playing with, and to also use that time to educate myself as much as possible with the business of basketball.
Joe Dumars, the year before you stepped into the front office, the Pistons were 32-50. We've just watched the Pistons for the seventh straight year compile at least 50 wins. How have you done that?
I've put a tremendous amount of emphasis on the people more so than just the player. You have a choice in this business. You can go with just talent and forget about character, or you can put a premium on character and still try to get good players. And so first and foremost for me is character. And I've tried to get good guys, and I've tried to get people, people that were dedicated, that had the same approach that I had in terms of wanting to win and sacrifice. And I think I would credit it to the people that we have here. I think that's the only way you can have this type of sustained success in professional sports today. You don't see it a lot, because I think too often people forsake or they sacrifice character and say, well, the guy is really talented, we're going to go with him anyway, and hopefully everything works out. And I've chosen not to do that, Jack. I've passed on some very, very good players because I did not think they had the character that I wanted here representing me and this organization.
We're talking to Joe Dumars, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Joe Dumars, the inaugural winner of the 1996 NBA Sportsmanship Award. Joe, Mr. Davison, what's made him so successful?
You know, a couple of things come to mind right away. I think that Bill Davidson has put a premium on the people, and not so much as the product. Same thing I was saying about putting a premium on character. As you stated, Jack, I wasn't the loudest and brashest player that was here in Detroit during all those years. And Mr. Davidson called me to do this particular job. I never seek this job. I never campaigned for this job. I wasn't even looking this way to do anything like this. And so he chose me because obviously he saw some of the same traits that he has. And so I think what makes him special for me is that he puts a premium on character. And I believe in that, and I know he believes in that. And I think that's why it's been such a great fit for me working here in this particular role with him being the owner.
Tom Wilson,
mm-hmm.
as witty a man as I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy's so handsome.
Mm-hmm.
What have you learned from Tom Wilson?
Tom's an excellent businessman. He understands business. He stays ahead of the curve. And he has a certain charisma about himself that I think he can walk in any room and make himself comfortable. And I think that's a very interesting and very good trait to have as a guy who's a leader. He leads his people over at the palace, and they know that he's leading, and they know he's not afraid. And I think that's what makes him a great leader.
You've got a history of making great choices. Drafting Tayshaun Prince in the 23rd pick, trading Grant Hill for Chuck Yadkins and Ben Wallace, on and on and on and on, trading Jerry Stackhouse for Rick Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Can you pick the ponies this well?
I wish.
And how do you do that?
I think first and foremost, in this particular seat here, if you're going to run a professional sports organization and you have a lot of tough decisions, Jack, that come across your desk on a regular basis, I mean some incredibly tough decisions, and what makes them tough is that you're going to get publicly second-guessed, criticized, scrutinized every single day in whatever you do. And I think the most important thing you can trait that you can have is you cannot be afraid to go with what you believe. And so the moves that I've made, I believed in them, and I wasn't afraid to fail. And I say that to people all the time. To be successful, you have to be willing to take a chance on failing. And so I'll fail or take a chance to fail to try to be successful. And it's not going to always work out. You're not going to always get them right. But you can't be afraid to fail. That can't be a part of your thinking. And that's what's helped me a tremendous amount.
2006, you go to Springfield, Massachusetts. You get into the Basketball Hall of Fame. When you went to that podium, what was your thoughts?
My thought was Natchitoches, Louisiana, to standing at that podium and looking out at that looking out at the crowd. And that to me was the first thing that crossed my mind, is that wow, this is a long way from little tiny Natchitoches, Louisiana, with the red dirt and the one high school and everything else. And I think most of all, what you do is you end up reflecting. You really do, Jack. You end up reflecting on where you've come from to get to where you are at that moment.
What are your thoughts on this year's playoffs?
It's going to be absolutely great. There are some great teams out there. I think teams like Boston and the Lakers, who have been past champions, are going to be tremendously tough. I think you have guys like LeBron James over in Cleveland. That's going to be incredible. The San Antonio Spurs are defending world champions. It's just so much going on right now, and it's absolutely, I think it's going to be great.
You've given back to the community in untold ways. Forgotten Harvest, Children's Hospital. You have the Joe Dumars field houses, three of them right now. Can you talk about those field houses?
The field houses, to me, really, truly was an idea to have somewhere for the young kids in this city to go to that was a safe, fun, productive environment. And that's what makes me really proud about the field houses, is that it's a place where parents can drop their kids and they know that the kids are going to be okay there. And I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of that, and that's one of my best accomplishments, I feel like, here in Detroit.
Yeah, very similar career to Dave Bing. What have you most admired and learned from Dave Bing?
Class personified. The guy carries himself with tremendous amount of class. He's done it the right way. He's another guy that's not loud and brash. He's a soft-spoken guy. But he's gotten a lot of stuff done, and I admire the way he's not only his accomplishments, but Jack, the way he's gone about doing it. That stands out to me more than anything else. He is truly, truly a great guy to admire.
The famous book by Friedman, "The World Is Flat, a Melting Pot." The NBA is an example of this. It's in the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the multi ethnic cultural of the NBA?
It's one of the great things about the NBA, because you meet people from all walks of life. And if you're a person that has a broad horizon, if you're a person that has curiosity, if you're a person that's interested in other cultures and environments, it is an absolutely great place to be. And I've enjoyed it from that perspective, because I've met so many different people from different backgrounds and different walks of life, and it's truly been interesting to me. And if you're not interested in that kind of stuff, then this probably isn't the place for you. But if you are, it is absolutely great.
Joe Dumars, what does the word team mean to you?
Sacrifice. It's not about you. Jack, it's one of the things that I say to new players whenever they come to Detroit. I bring them into my office, and as I'm speaking to them, one of the things I say to them is this. I'll sit and I'll look at the guy across from my desk, and I'll say to him, listen, coming and playing here in Detroit is not about you. Coming and playing here in Detroit is not about me. It's about us, and it's always about us, and it's not about any individual. And so when you say team to me, immediately the first thing that comes to my mind is sacrifice. If you're going to be a part of a team, Jack, it can't be about you or any other individual. It has to be about the group, and I make that very clear with the guys that that come here and play.
Last question, Joe Dumars. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Dream big. I did. I dreamed big. But people say that, Jack, and they tell kids to dream big, and then I think all too often they stop. I would say after you tell a kid to dream big, and I would say this to every kid out there listening, not only do you have to dream big, but then you have to be willing to work extremely hard and dedicate yourself to making that dream come true. And the last thing I'll say, Jack, is this. You can dream big, you can work hard, and you're still going to have bumps in the road. When those bumps in the road come, don't give up. Don't quit. That's where you have to have that internal resolve inside of you that says, I'm dream big, I'm working hard, and here's a bump in the road. I refuse to quit. I'm going to show up again tomorrow, the next day, and the next day until my dream comes true. That's what I would say to every kid out there listening right now.
Joe Dumars, thanks. Thanks for all the joy. Talk about classiness. All the pride you've given millions of us for 22-plus years.
Thanks for having me on, Jack. It's my pleasure to be on with you.
Our guest next Sunday will be another great story, Reverend Alfred Calvert. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahome.